This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas, with your usual pop culture bits thrown in for good measure. Despite this week being slightly lower on the quantity of streaming content dropping, the good news is that the quality of at least two or three of the new shows is box office. And speaking of box office, cinema-wise, there may not be a massive blockbuster dropping this week. It's all over the hill, folks. It's all over the hill. But you can trust me, there are a hell of a lot of new options for you to cast your eyes over at the local multiplex with varying degrees of success. Hits, misses, all over the gaff. So, shall we begin?
An agent with the FBI has been abducted.
She's my daughter.
Everyone expected a response from Washington.
No, wait!
What kind of trouble will this cause him?
The devastating kind. In
my eyes. I want some answers now.
Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow finally return as old men in The Old Man on Disney Plus for its second season after a two-year gap. With Bridges playing former CIA agent Dan Chase and Lithgow playing former FBI assistant director Harold Harper, a lot of us thought this was a drama series that had gone the way of the streaming dodo, but the reality of the show is as fascinating as its made-up storylines. It got its ass kicked during the first season, during COVID. Then Bridges got a cancer diagnosis. And once he recovered, it was all looking good to come back. And then the writer's strike kicked in. So, holy crap, they went through it all. But Hulu and Disney were never going to let it go. And now we are finally back. This time, Chase and Harper are on the hunt for a kidnapped woman suffering an identity crisis with dire implications, which sees Chase embroiled in his most serious case yet. Part grumpy old man road trip, part sketchy espionage thriller. I thoroughly enjoyed the first season. Started off really, really well. Yeah, a bit lighter near the end, but still, I was in and looking forward to a second season. What's not to love? Although, I'm just saying, it has been 2 years, so you may need to go to the recap and chill or binge bot refresher courses on YouTube and look back at season one so you know what the hell is going on. Previously on, that is Old Man season two, which is now on Disney Plus.
Police all over Europe are looking for him.
We are reaching out to all our international partners for assistance.
He's an exceptional assassin. He will kill again unless we stop him.
There's no record of him anywhere.
This guy's a ghost.
I know I can find him.
I've heard good things about you, Bianca.
Don't let me down.
His code name's Jackal. He's a mimic.
Frederick Forsyth's 1971 classic thriller, Day of the Jackal, gets a shiny new adaptation on Sky Atlantic and Now TV in a 10-part series starring Eddie Redmayne, Lashana Lynch and Charles Dance. This cat-and-mouse chase epic? Is it an epic? Anyway, follows lone assassin the Jackal, who has been unrivaled as a hitman for hire for years, but appears to have finally met his match in a tenacious British intelligence officer. Reimagined into a contemporary political setting, this adaptation promises a fresh twist as the edge-of-your-seat madness of it all plays out across Europe with Bianca closing in on the Jackal himself. Oh, Lord. I kind of think of, you know, what they did with Ripley. I think that's the vibe I'm getting here, and it does look really, really good. And feck it, I'm all in. Give it to me. That is Day of the Jackal, which is now on Sky Atlantic and Now TV.
To return peace to this city, you must declare martial law.
Topside is the real enemy. You have the chance to rally the Undercity together. You're a symbol. So what are you planning?
To watch it all burn.
Steampunk ahoy! Fans of the absolutely stunning and brilliant adult animated series Arcane have been waiting for quite a while for its second season and supposedly final season from Netflix. Hands down, one of the best and coolest animated series of the last decade. The first series landed in 2021. Well, yes, the wait is finally over. Season 2 is landing from Saturday, November 9th. Based on the hugely popular multiplayer online battle arena game League of Legends, developed and released by Riot Games in 2009, it is set amidst the escalating unrest between the rich utopian city of Piltover and the seedy, oppressed underbelly of Zaun, where sisters V and Jinx find themselves embroiled in a developing conflict over clashing convictions and arcane technologies. Early word is that Season 2 goes to even higher levels, which is quite hard to believe because the first one is so fucking good. But I am so ready to rock. This season, which has 9 episodes, will drop them in 3 installments, each over the next 3 weekends, every Saturday. I cannot recommend this series enough. If you haven't seen Season 1, what have you been doing with your life? Oh my God, just do it. Astonishing, original, beautiful, gripping. Boy oh boy, that's Arcane Season 2, which I'm slightly excited by. Begins on Netflix from Saturday, November 9th. By the way, it has cost Riot Games $250 million to make the 2 seasons of Arcane. Now, the money's all there on the screen, but holy crap, that is the most expensive animated series ever in the history of ever. And they'd be lucky to break even, but I say it again, absolute genius. Money well spent. Well, not really, but anyway.
Somebody sitting there?
No, go for it. When James and I met, it was like magic. And we made a deal.
What if we meet next Christmas at the Pentatonix concert?
Shut up.
Try a personal concierge service. They can get you anything you can think of.
Hey, I'm Teddy. I've worked with almost every ticket broker in the city.
Listen, Teddy, my entire romantic future might hinge on this ticket.
Netflix begin their Christmas movie onslaught this week with the seasonal rom-com Meet Me Next Christmas. In pursuit of a fairy tale romance with the man of her dreams, hopeless romantic Layla must race to New York City to get her hands on the hottest ticket in town, the sold-out Pentatonix Christmas Eve concert. Christina Milian plays the lead here in what looks like a perfect get that feckin' iron and board out kind of movie for the weekend. Or, do you know what, if you're slightly hungover on Saturday, feck it, it'll do the job also. Anyway, absolute nonsense, oh so cute. That is Meet Me Next Christmas, which is now on Netflix. Also out this week on Prime Video, a recent cinema release, Firebrand, is a British historical drama based on the 2013 novel Queen's Gambit by Elizabeth Freemantle, which focuses on Catherine Parr, Queen of England, and the wife and widow of Henry VIII, with Alicia Vikander, Jude Law, and Eddie Marsan starring. The plot basically revolves around Catherine Parr, the sixth wife of King Henry VIII, who is named regent while the tyrant battles abroad. However, when the king returns increasingly ill and paranoid, Catherine finds herself fighting for her own survival. Having been in cinemas, its reviews were a bit all over the gaff, but if you're a bit of a history buff or period drama nut, it's now free to stream and it's probably worth your time. So that is Firebrand, which is now on Prime Video.
Mike is the greatest heavyweight of all time, in my opinion. But it's my time.
Hard work defines me. I look at myself as a liberator. I created guys like Jake Paul.
Be in good shape, because your health depends on it.
We're going to war, and he's getting knocked out. I'm getting to show the world who I am.
Is Jake Paul legit?
Unless you have been living under an extremely large rock or boulder and have turned off all your socials for the past year, then you should be aware of the madness ahead next week. That is the so-called MVP heavyweight boxing event, otherwise known as Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson on Netflix, which will be aired live on the streamer on Friday, November the 15th, midnight here in Ireland. Well, in order to get us all pumped up for the event and to get the pre-hype started, as if it needs any, Netflix has released Countdown Paul vs. Tyson this week, which is a three-part docuseries following both fighters as they prepare for the carnage in the ring ahead. Love it or hate it, this one will hands down be Netflix's biggest ever live event to date and probably will surprise a lot of folks with regards to its interest worldwide, both from people who are fully invested to complete randomers who are curious to see what the hell is going on and who gets the head boxed off who. To be fair, the choice of which bad boy folks want to win is as sketchy a choice at best. But wait, there's also a wee nugget of Irish importance that will keep you invested, because Countdown will also follow the lead up to one of the most anticipated women's fights in recent history, the rematch between undisputed super lightweight champion Katie Taylor and unified featherweight champion Amanda "The Real Deal" Serrano, as the two train off to face off for the undisputed super lightweight championship title, which is a co-main event on that stream too. Anyway, ahead of the storm on November 15th, why not have a wee nose at the prep, the smack talk, and the many, many montages? And who knows, on November 15th at midnight, you might find yourself, against your better judgment, tuning in to see what the hell is going on. So that's Countdown Paul vs. Tyson, which is now on Netflix. Katie 2. Just a quick shout out to some returning shows which have some pretty dedicated fan bases. YA drama Outer Banks returns to Netflix this week with the second part of its episodes for season 4. All 5 episodes have now dropped. Yes, the Pogues versus the Kooks go at it again in this extremely popular series, which has been given the green light for one more final season, season 5. But for now, that's Outer Banks season 4, part 2, which is now on Netflix. Bob's Burgers Season 15 Part 1 lands on Disney Plus this week. Nothing else needs to be said. The fans have been waiting impatiently and finally they can calm down, because yes, Season 15 Bob's Burgers Part 1 is now on Disney Plus. And an absolute juggernaut and smash hit in the US, less so here, but it's gaining traction, Yellowstone Season 5 Part 2 returns to Paramount Plus. As far as I can figure, this is the part of the season where lead actor Kevin Costner does not appear due to his money wrangles, time issues, and yes, him wanting to go away and make his underperforming Western Horizon, which weirdly has similar Yellowstone vibes too. Anyways, one for all the conservative cowboys out there, that's Yellowstone Season 5 Part 2, which is on Paramount Plus from Monday the 11th. Oh, how could I forget? I could easily forget, because Citadel Honey Bunny on Prime Video is the Indian spin-off following October's Italian spin-off to Citadel, which was Citadel Diana. And it's another of the several planned international spin-offs from the Russo brothers' globe-trotting spy series Citadel. Continuing to expand the world of Citadel, the 2023 series about a fallen spy agency which wiped clean its agents' memories, this Indian 90s set spy thriller attempts to keep the magic going. But if an espionage thriller spin-off lands in the woods, does anybody hear it? The original Citadel was an expensive flop for the Russos, and admittedly these local spin-offs are probably a lot cheaper to make, but does anyone truly care? Is anybody watching these? Please let me know. But Amazon being Amazon, they are all in. They're throwing money at the wall and desperately seeing if anything will stick. That's Citadel Honey Bunny, which is now on Prime Video.
There is enormous amount of evidence to suggest that we do have a non-human intelligence interacting with us on this planet. We need to get beyond that obvious question, are UFOs real, to what really matters. Why are they here? And what do they want from us? We can handle it, can't we? My name is George Knapp. People know me as the UFO reporter. Last year, the Pentagon debuted Arrow to investigate UFOs.
Arrow has found no evidence.
If they would go to such lengths to discredit this topic, it tells us we're going to have to do it ourselves. We need solid evidence, and we need it now.
Oh yes, the truth is out there. The truth is out there. Because in Investigation Alien on Netflix, renowned investigative journalist George Knapp reveals the findings of his 30-year quest investigating UFOs and brings forward never-before seen evidence. Oh my lord! One for the tinfoil hats everywhere. Oh, sign me up. This is a new docuseries for believers everywhere. That is Investigation Alien, which is now on Netflix. And finally, this week on streaming in the non-English section, first up we have Born for the Spotlight on Netflix, which is a new Taiwanese comedy series. Chasing glamour, fame and artistry, women with a passion for acting must push the limits to pursue their dreams in the ruthless world of show business. Its focus is on two close friends whose relationship becomes strained when one moves off screen and into the world of artist management. So that's Born for the Spotlight from Taiwan, which is now on Netflix. Coming from Korea, Mr. Plankton on Netflix follows a man with little chance for happiness and his ex, the unhappiest bride-to-be, who are forced to accompany one another on the final journey of his life as they bail on her wedding and head on an unexpected road trip. Some would call this one a screwball comedy series. That is Mr. Plankton, which is now on Netflix. Coming from Spain, Bank Under Siege on Netflix is set in 1981. When armed men hold up a bank and take hundreds hostage, a reporter races against the authorities to uncover the true motive for the heist. Spain have a good recent history of making decent heist series, so you can consider me intrigued on this one. And as you know, I do love a good heist. So that is Bank Under Siege, which is now on Netflix. And finally this week, coming from France, The Cage on Netflix is a new series set in the MMA fighting world. Dreaming of going pro, a young fighter struggles to be seen until an unexpected combat lands him a shot at the big time and a brutal rival in the cage. Oh yeah, manly man stuff all the way. So that is The Cage, which is now on Netflix. So there you go, that's your streaming. I told you, not a huge amount of stuff. However, gems. There are some beautiful little gems in there and you need to go watch them. Go watch them. Right, moving swiftly along, let's take a look at this week's cinema.
Cool place.
Welcome to the North Pole.
Come again? You see
what I see. Last night, Red One, also known as St. Nicholas of Myra, was abducted.
Are you saying Santa Claus has been kidnapped?
You're the best tracker in the world. You're gonna help us find him.
I work alone. You used to. I'm not gonna like you. I can tell right away, out of everyone here, I like you the least.
Red One is a Christmas action comedy which stars Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, Chris Evans, J.K. Simmons, Kiernan Shipka, and Lucy Liu. Directed by Jake Kasdan, who gave us both Jumanji movies. What is not to be excited about? The Rock, Chris Evans, the guy who made Jumanji. Holy moly. When Santa Claus is kidnapped, Callum Drift, the head of North Pole Security, who is played by Johnson, must team up with Jack O'Malley, played by Evans, a bounty hunter, to find and rescue Santa. Santa is played here by J.K. Simmons. Ultimately, this is a streaming movie which has a budget of $250 million that they're thrown into cinemas well in advance, and then, as far as I can figure out, Amazon and MGM will release it on Prime Video for actually Christmas, I think? I don't know. They're trying to build a hot new franchise, and while the budget is all there to see in the screen, and it oozes box office stars, and yes, CGI coming out of your ears, ultimately it all feels a bit hollow, a bit shallow, and meh. Don't get me wrong, when I was sitting there, I was enjoying it in parts. I was giggling away to myself. A lot of people absolutely hated it. I actually thought it was fine. I appreciated the go big or go home element of it. But its heart was basically, there was none. It was just a big black piece of AI coal. I was entertained, but in a, this would be ab fab to watch at home on the couch kind of way. Like, I just don't think it's a great cinematic experience. As I said, it's CGI to death, and do you know what, maybe if it's on 4DX, that's probably the only way you should watch it. Also because 4DX would distract you from all the plot holes. There's so many plot holes. The Rock does rock things. Chris Evans is charming as a lovable rogue, but not very Christmassy. He's a bit grumpy. J.K. Simmons as a swole Santa is it's interesting, I suppose. And Lucy Liu is underused throughout, while poor Kiernan Shipka is such a tragically lightweight villain. There's only one probably decent part, and that's where we enter the world of Krampus, and it all gets a bit dark and moody, and that was quite fun. It kind of reminds me in parts of Robin Williams' epic fail of a family flick that was Toys. Again, something which looked beautiful and was fab, but really did not register with anybody. Coming out in the first week of November, it definitely feels like they're planning a Christmas streaming drop for the movie. And with Gladiator 2, Wicked and Moana 2 fast approaching, it doesn't have very long to survive in the box office winter, and I don't think it's gonna. But, as I said, if you're looking for something that resembles a Christmas Ghostbusters movie, maybe this'll tick that wrapped up in a bow box for you. It's not the worst, it is definitely not the best. As I said, I chuckled away. Small kids probably won't enjoy it. Slightly tweenier kids may enjoy it. Yeah. This review is that movie. It's all over the gap. Anyway, Red One is now in cinemas. You know what? It's like a nice hot mulled wine. You're drinking it, you're loving it, and you know yourself, after a few scoops, it's starting. I'm not feeling great now. This isn't good.
Dear Aunt Lucy, I have very important news. We're coming to visit you.
The Browns are coming to Peru.
Get ready, everyone! He's coming!
Oh, what a handsome boat.
Hola!
Smooth, strong, easy on the eye, and that's just the boat. Voila.
Paddington in Peru is the third installment in the Lovable Bear franchise, and with the first two having achieved insane critical praise, this one had all the feelings and all the vibes of a slam dunk. But wait, hold on a minute. We started to notice things like Paul King is not directing this one, and instead it's Dougal Wilson. Who knew? Yes, a man known for directing John Lewis ads and music videos. Oh, sketchy. You know what? Sure, we have to. We all have to start somewhere. Sally Hawkins also decided, no, I'm done. So she's gone and has been replaced by Emily Mortimer. But apart from that, all the usual gang seem to be there. And in this one, Paddington returns to Peru to visit his beloved Aunt Lucy, who now resides at the home for retired bears. And with the Brown family in tow, a thrilling adventure ensues when a mystery plunges them into an unexpected journey. Yes, the classic bear out of water, bear out of London, back in Peru, so now I suppose it's the Brown family out of water. However, with no press screenings for this one, as you know, that always raises a bit of a flag, and trying to defeat two near perfect movies, this one could go either way. So what better way to decide than to let the little ones, let the minions, let the O'Callaghan crew decide, thumbs up, thumbs down, off with its head or back on with its head. Right, we're recording, we're all good to go. Right, you little minions, Paddington in Peru, the people want to know, the press didn't get to see the screening, we all want to know, is it any good? So my first and most important question, starting with Kelsey, did you enjoy the movie?
Yes, I did enjoy the movie. It's actually really good. It's good. I enjoyed it.
Next up, yes, in the middle there.
I really loved the movie. It was just really, really funny.
Okay, and Minnie Mary over there?
I loved the movie. It's very, very funny.
I know you all saw the first two movies.
Yeah.
So is this as good as the first two or nearly as good?
I think it's as good, in fairness. I think it's really good as well. Okay. So they're all very good, and they're all good.
I think it's pretty equal. They're both really good.
So yeah. It's a good trilogy. Yeah, it's a good trilogy across the way. That's good to hear. Have you any favourite parts in the movie that made you laugh or you liked?
There was, but they're kind of like spoilers, so no, I'm not going to tell you. For now, you have to watch the movie to find out.
Can you tell me why you like the parts without telling me what the parts are?
Well, they're very heartwarming, maybe. That's just and they're just nice.
Okay.
No spoilers for me, but the part that I like most is very, very funny.
Okay, and
I'm not spoiling it, but I think he was very, very happy.
I like this non-spoiler reviews. This is great. Really important question here. Did your dad enjoy it? Don't let him tell you what he thought, or did he fall asleep during the movie? Don't look at him. What did you think? Did you think he enjoyed it?
Yeah, he did, I'd say so.
Because a lot of people, they have to bring their kids, so you think adults might enjoy it too?
Yeah, I'd say he liked it.
Excellent. And is there anything else about the movie, about the setting, because the first two were in London and now you're off in the jungle somewhere. Is there anything else you want to tell me about the film you liked?
No.
No.
Not that I can think of. I like how it was set in Peru, because Peru is really
jungle.
Cool.
Yeah.
Instead of a forest, like a normal forest where bears usually are. Yeah. Yeah, it's in Peru, and Peru's really interesting, so, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And what's his, is it Aunt Lucy, is that her name?
Yeah, Aunt Lucy.
Is she fun?
Yeah, she's nice. Yeah, I like her.
Cool, Abula. So, going across the board again, would you recommend it to your friends, and how would you recommend it?
Yeah, I would recommend it to my friends. I'd tell them it can be a bit emotional in some parts, but then otherwise it's brilliant. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd recommend it to my friends. Just bring a tissue or two.
Ah.
Yeah, I recommend it to my friends.
There you go. I love it. So that's a big thumbs up. Now I'll have to go see it because I haven't seen it yet. So all the thumbs up, yeah. Thumbs up, thumbs up. 72 thumbs up. Everybody's happy. I think that will do it for now. Thank you very much.
Go ahead on the set.
Hey, Pharrell.
Hey, how you doing, man? You know what would be cool is if we told my story with Lego pieces.
Seriously?
Yes,
Lego.
Just be open.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
When I was a kid, I knew I was different. And people would say, oh, that's an odd child. And that crushed my spirit. But I loved music. It was mesmerizing to me. I would see beautiful cues of light cascading.
Another, is it a kid's, I don't know what it is, sorry. Piece by Piece is a music doc that takes a look at the life of Pharrell Williams, but it's a wee bit different to your normal music doc because, yes, in this one, it's Lego bricks which tell the life story of the celebrated singer, songwriter and record producer. Pharrell, from his childhood in Virginia to his success in the music and fashion industry. Straight up, first things first, I'm not the biggest fan of Pharrell Williams' music. However, anyone who knows me knows that I'm always up for a decent and intriguing music doc. And yes, intriguing this one most definitely is. The decision to go all out Lego is both fascinating and bizarre. Because who is the audience for this venture? Adults, while appreciating the Lego setup, may quickly become bored of the format. While kids will see Lego, get excited, and possibly expect a more adventurous and funny experience. I had an okay time. Again, I like my music doc, so it was enjoyable enough, but would you bring a family to see it? Most likely not. It's kind of an odd business choice, shall we say. But his producer life is definitely the most interesting and fascinating part of the doc. And he seems like a decent lad. But my limited love, shall we say, for the Despicable Me song, Happy. Oh, and his Get Lucky Daft Punk song is probably my least favourite Daft Punk song. Although, I have to say, I did enjoy seeing Lego Daft Punk dancing away. Yeah, it's pretty cute. Anyway, it's definitely one for hardcore Lego heads and music doc heads, but that's a pretty niche market. I'm not too sure kids will be up for it, but yeah, it's Lego. I don't know. You decide, because Peace Place Peace is now in cinemas.
Did I ever tell you about me grandfather?
And the brother?
As close could be, until his brother sailed to America and they never spoke again. I want you to find our American family and make things right.
All right, Dad.
Now! I want you to call them now.
Hello, not interested.
Hello, I am your cousin, Kieran.
And he wants you to just go to Ireland. What's the worst that could happen?
The problem with People sees Colm Meaney and Paul Reiser star as two estranged cousins who have never met before, must try and put to rest a generation's worth of family disputes before they start another one. Honouring his father's last wish to reunite with the American side of his family, Irishman Kieran calls his cousin Barry out of the blue with the offer for him to visit his homeland. Barry, keen to escape from the daily grind of his New York real estate firm, agrees to make the long trip over. And then, yes folks, it all kicks off into a mahoosive deluge of paddywhackery. Oh my god, I mean, Bord Fawlty may have to sue Paul Reiser, who is a writer and producer on this one. With a shillelagh under his arm, every Irish Derby O'Gill far and away cliche is rolled out for all to bear witness to. Oh, weirdly, the Americans will probably think this is a piece of genius and love it. For anyone from the homeland, a drunken watch over a few pints of Guinness on streaming may appease you, especially if you liked Waking Ned, but probably not as good. However, as a cinematic experience, I'd be steering well clear of this hokey fare. Like, whoever, the problem with People is the problem with this. Oh, beep, beep, beep. That's me getting well away from this. That is the problem with People. All heart and no content, which is now in cinemas.
Hey, Benny!
Let's go home.
What? Come
on. Let's go.
Dad, why are you in such a good mood?
The toad! This drug toad's gonna pay for everything.
It's not all these crazy schemes that Compton offer you.
Bird is the new movie from Academy Award winner Andrea Arnold, who made American Honey and also directed all of season 2 of Big Little Lies. Yeah, there you go. This one is a tender and striking coming-of-age fable about marginalised life in the fringes of contemporary society. 12-year-old Bailey, played by newcomer Nakia Adams, lives with her devoted but slightly chaotic single dad, Bug, played by Barry Keoghan, and wayward brother Hunter in a squat in Gravesend, North Kent. Approaching puberty and seeking attention and adventure, Bailey's fractured home life is transformed when she encounters Bird, played by Franz Rogowski, a mysterious stranger on a journey of his own. This is a fascinating and engrossing indie flick, absolutely tragically bleak in parts, yet I couldn't look away throughout. It is Nakia Adams' performance and her ability to consistently portray Bailey's tenderness and positive wonder at her surroundings while dealing with the bleakness of her situation that elevates the movie to impressive levels. What could have been a movie filled with familiar, well-trodden societal tropes is instead one full of hope and light throughout, while not shying away from the realities of the life the characters find themselves in. Barry does what Barrys do and is a sketchy, unhinged, lovable rogue throughout who gets to hang out with his Fontaine's DC buddies doing toad drugs and dancing insanely. We would expect nothing else from Barry. Anyways, while not a chuckle fest, it's a wordy catch if this is your kind of thing, but at some point do try catch it, even if it's down the line on streaming. That is Bird, which is now on limited release in cinemas, and on very limited release in cinemas ahead of its Apple TV release in a few weeks. Blitz is a historical war drama written, produced and directed by Steve McQueen. The film stars Saoirse Ronan, Harris Dickinson and Elliot Heffernan in his film debut. In World War II London, defiant 9-year-old George is evacuated to the countryside by his mother Rita to escape the bombings, only to find himself in immense peril amidst the Blitz while his distraught mother searches for him. Definitely a big awards play by Apple and McQueen. Early reviews have been middling to decent. That is Blitz, which is now on limited release, very limited release in cinemas, and will land on Apple TV Plus on November 22nd. While there's no music or books to talk about this week, well, ones that I want to talk about. Actually, I need to flag last week, The Cure released a new album, first in a bajillion years, Songs for a Lost World. And now, I'm not a Cure head. Let's get that straight. I don't really like The Cure that much. I like their bangers, but you know, I'm one of those, yeah, I love that album, Greatest Hits. That's their best album. However, this new album, it's like 8 or 9 songs. It is an emo, moody, slow build banger. And I have to say, I have been listening to it all week going, what is happening? This is fantastic. So even if you don't like The Cure, give it a listen. I just want to give it a shout out. Songs of a Lost World. Yeah, interesting stuff. Actually, feck it. Let's live on the edge. Before we go to Three Things, here's a quick snippet of The Cure. And the first song and single from the album, which is a 6.5 minute epic where Owl Robert doesn't start singing till about 3.5 minutes in. What? What a banger. Well, slow banger. Anyways, moving on. As I mentioned, let's take a quick look at three things we noticed in pop culture this week. First up, for anyone who was getting pumped and excited to see Bong Joon-ho's follow-up to Parasite in early 2025, well, sit back down. You're going to have to wait a little bit longer for the Robert Pattinson sci-fi epic, because Warner Brothers have shifted the movie to the end of April 2025 in the US, and possibly even later here. What? It has moved into the spot vacated by Antoine Fuqua's Michael Jackson biopic, which itself has moved to October 2025. Probably a better spot for them. On a more positive note, it does mean that Mickey 17 will have access to IMAX screens for its release, but with it now being delayed, is it over a year? Is it 18 months? Holy crap. Let's hope this is as a result of this business move as opposed to because it's absolutely dodgy. Anyway, we'll eventually get there. Bong Joon-ho's Mickey 17. Yeah, someday it'll turn up. Elsewhere, in a move that has shocked both Netflix, and Hollywood, according to the trades, Emerald Fennell has turned down a reported $150 million for her Wuthering Heights adaptation starring Jacob Elordi and Margot Robbie, and has instead opted for Warner Brothers at a considerably smaller deal of $80 million. Why? Well, theatrical release was the be-all and end-all for Fennell, who doesn't trust Netflix's release model. What's slightly bizarre is that seemingly Netflix wasn't even the highest bidder, as Amazon had offered even more following their success with Saltburn, and they do have theatrical release, as they are currently doing with Red One, but maybe Fennell thinks, you know what, Bezos, he's a bit of a dope and doesn't want his money. Anyways, this is a huge development in the Hollywood game, as finally folks are seeing Netflix for what they are, a pure streamer with minimal theatrical engagement. The release of Glass Onion 3 should be a fascinating rollout, especially since both director and Daniel Craig are kind of shouting at the sky saying, we want release, but it's Netflix. They don't really do it. We'll see what happens. It might turn up for a week. That is Emerald Fennell taking less money. And finally, ahead of the release of Wicked in cinemas, have we got an auction for you. Oh, ho, ho. If you fancied rocking up on the red carpet wearing the actual ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz, well, start looking for some loose change down behind the sofa, because they are all yours if you have around $1 million behind the cushions. The slippers worn on screen, obviously by Judy Garland in the 1939 classic MGM musical, are up for auction at Heritage Auctions with the current bid at $812,500. And then when you add in the buyer's premium, a fee paid by the winning bidder to the auction house, the price is currently at $1.01 million. Ooh, but don't panic. If you need a bit more cash, the auction continues until December 7th, so at least you have time to pop down the old credit union for that loan. And there you go. That is your news for the week. Not the craziest week ever for news, but in fairness, the dystopia that Hollywood feared has arrived on their door, and maybe they were just distracted by it all. Right, we'll leave it at that. This is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast, wishing you all the best, and until next week, stay safe and binge happy. Well, hello there, post-credit traveler. Welcome yet again. Da-da-da-da-da. Ah, yes, here we are, here we are. Have we got a doozy for you? Because today I want to take you back to a mystical, mythical time. This is a haunting, nostalgia-filled tale for the kids listening out there, because it's full of unbelievable things that they'll feel are quite impossible in this day and age. And then for the older folk listening, you might get a bit dreamy and misty-eyed. It was the 1990s, and we're in a far-off land. Well, actually, being exact, we are literally in the middle of a far-off land. Imagine a town that turns itself upside down to welcome the young and the wild of Ireland to come and live in their houses, in their beer gardens, in their front rooms. An innocent time full of chancers and business-minded folks who would charge 5 pounds for a big dirty fry in their kitchen to strangers, or their front garden. Who would offer showers to strangers for £3, or even £10 for each of them to sleep in their front rooms on the couch. What is happening? Imagine giant fields filled with tents that barely made it through the night, as actual tent theft due to the lack of security was a thing those days. And I mean the whole tent, not just its contents. And imagine a festival in a giant gas stadium where over the years the lineup of musical bands grew exponentially and the genres were absolutely ridiculous. You name it, they played. You had the Four of Us, Deacon Blue, Meatloaf, The Prodigy, The Wonder Stuff, Primal Scream, Cypress Hill, Rage Against the Machine, Engine Alley, Christopher, Carter, USM, Brian Adams, Happy Mondays, Black Crowes, Transvision Vamp, and the band which sent me down this rabbit hole, Crash Test Dummies. And that's to name but a few. Now imagine such a gig where there's only one stage and all of these bands play there. There's no exceptions, there's no sneaky second or third stages. And once you enter the venue, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. There was a traffic light system on stage for the bands. It was a big thing back then. Green for go, orange for 10 minutes to go on your set. Red for why are you still playing? Your record company are being fined £1,000 for every minute you play over. It was a wondrous, beautiful time, which slowly began to shift its vibe when in 1993, a second stage created by an ancient music scroll of a mag called Hot of the Press saw a lot of Irish bands break off from the main area. However, at the last Trip the Tip, aka Fail at 1994, where they moved back to the one stage only idea and reduced it to 2 days, all due to locals and the Garda and politicians becoming tired of the hedonistic days out. It moved to Cork the following year, Páirc Uí Chaoimh, for 1 year only, The Lark in the Park, and that one featured Stone Roses, Blur, Orbital, Kylie, and The Beautiful South. Believe it or not, there was an indoor Féile in 1996 at The Point, headlined by Pulp, and then there was a one-day return trip to Tip in 1997 that featured The Cardigans, The Prodigy, Cooler Shaker, Hush, Hush, and Manic Street Preachers. There are no words to describe those early festival times. Tip was the coolest place on the planet, believe it or not, for 3 days. You got to witness the most insane array of bands you'd ever seen due to the fact that you were kind of trapped and it was all on one stage. And then in the puff of a smoke, Féile was gone. Gone, gone, gone. Reborn over time as Witness and possibly Oxygen. These were for the unruly young folk, as those Electric Picnic hipsters would tell anyone who was listening. Those Electric Picnic hipsters? Yep, they were probably the original Féile heads. But at least Witness and Oxygen had the energy and carnage of the early Féiles. Again, security, sadly, was always the last thing on the organisers' minds. My fave story from Féile? Well, I can't really talk about them. I can't. But I do love the fact, one I can talk about is the fact that Neil, who was the drummer in our band, The Other Extreme, you may remember them from a previous podcast. No, we did not play Féile because the actual Extreme did. Anyways, his band Puppy Love Bomb opened Féile in 94, and when leaving the stage, the lead singer joked to the audience, "Enjoy the rest of your day except for that shite Aslan." You see, they had one of the most iconic t-shirts at the time with the catchphrase, "Dublin is dead," which was surrounded by a frame of the names of every hot new Dublin band that had been getting all the hype. You can blame U2 and record companies on that. And on the back of the t-shirt was "Kill the Hordes," as in the Golden Horde. Well, wearing that t-shirt and walking off stage back to drink their free beers in the dressing room, they were set upon by none other than Billy and Christy from Aslan, who were not feckin' happy in any way and wanted to take them outside and batter them. However, they were dragged off by their management team because, yes, they were supposed to be on stage next and the green light was on go. So they did promise to come back and batter their lads later, but alas, they never came back. Anyways, it was wearing a Crash Test Dummies tee last Sunday at the gig that I purchased at Féile in 94 that brought all this back to this old head. And well, kids, now you know. No mobile phones, no internet. If you lost your mates at any time of the gig, it was either see you back at the tent or near the medical tent or in that brecky front garden. And it was kind of a every 3 hour type thing. You'd turn up and hope somebody would remember that you'd gone missing or they'd gone missing. With that, let's finish with a band who I saw numerous times across numerous Féiles and were simply magical. Ah, yes, the Wonder Stuff. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. What happened at Féile will always stay at Féile. Probably for the best. Take it away, lads. Woohoo!
Not at all. Well, if you have to let me down, my friend, then kick me to the floor.